So you get back from this long tour to Los Angeles, and what happens next to
which one are you like
the 66 Southern tour? Did the 66 to 67 tour include the South too, or
yes?
Okay, so you're on the road for quite a while. Yeah. You get back to Los Angeles. What happens next to the Music Machine?
Well, it's the it would depend on what time it was. You know, we would take a 2-week break, and then we start rehearsing again and go out on another tour. And that gave time for the business management get another road thing together. Hopefully, in the same state, maybe we could do some high schools or some colleges, or you know what I mean. We used to do University of Minnesota Morris, and that's one that we swung around when we were after the St. Paul Auditorium when we were here. We used to do like forts, and you know, when guys were getting ready to get shipped, deployed, you know, mm-hmm. to Vietnam, you know, I mean, play for those guys. And I remember a couple of those, we did a couple of them, and but all kinds of, we do all kinds of stuff. And I mean, it wasn't all just concerts and stuff, but we did have some nice concerts, but it wasn't the big ones though, you know. It wasn't the mm-hmm. never got a chance to play the big ones. We did have a chance to do I believe it was the Monterey Rock Festival.
Monterey Pop?
Yeah. And we had a chance to do Woodstock.
What happened?
No money. There's no money in it. See what I mean? Management said there's no money in that. So, there you are, you know.
One of those what ifs.
Sure. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you go back, you know, and you'd find, you go down to a theater and you'd see it. You go, you know, we could have done that, you know, if our management would have been. Had a little, you know, what we call vision.
Did you guys get to know the bands in Los Angeles, like the Seeds, the Buffalo Springfield, the Birds, the Electric Prunes?
Played with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In concerts with them, sure.
I've often wondered if Sean Bonnywell and Jim Morrison ever got together. Did that ever happen?
Definitely, yeah. Whiskey a Go-Go.
How'd that go over?
Well, they were both, you know, had... shall we say, egos. And oftentimes egos clash or whatever. I certainly don't want to speak for Sean. I'm just saying that sometimes, you know, I mean, I had Eric Burton and the Animals over at my apartment one night. And I sat with their drummer, you know, and I had a pair of sticks in my hand and stuff, and I was playing on a practice pad and that. And he didn't want anything to do with it. Hmm. And I thought, well, that was dumb, you know, for me to sit there and, you know, embarrass myself, you know, thinking that he'd play along with me or something, you know what I mean? What do you do when you're 22 years old, 23, you know what I mean? You know, and then they noticed I didn't have any marijuana, so they left. So that's, you know, that's the way it went.
How long did the original lineup of the Music Machine last?
66 and 67 on tour and stuff like that. Of course, it didn't mm-hmm. count, not counting the Ragamuffins in terms of the mm-hmm. that, you know. But that lineup basically was 2 years, I would say, maybe 2.5 years.
You talk about chemistry in one of these quotes here. How important is chemistry to a band?
Very important. How many bands have you been accustomed with that the lead singer or anybody else in the band would go, he'd put his wrist up to his head and he would say, I want to go off on my own and be a star and do a solo album and that. And the first thing I would think was that, oh my God, you don't do that. Why? Because you've got a hit record. And I would think to myself, how many people have a chance to be a national player with a hit record? I look around and I go, well, not very many. And when you get something like that, it's like carrying around a bar of gold with you. You know, you don't let go of it. You don't sell yourself to some other kind of thing on some kind of a, you know, these management people, they come up to you and they say, hey, let's do this and do that. And you can go off and get rid of those guys and da-da-da, you know what I mean? No, don't do that. Sometimes there are groups come up like, I believe in like American Idol, and you know, they go on these shows and stuff like that. And they, after it's all said and done, and they either win or come very close to winning or whatever, they even keep their own bands that they started out with. Good idea, because you know something, the chemistry is right in the band. Chemistry is so important. It's not just good players. You can find good players anywhere, and you can teach them parts and stuff like that. Can you get along with them on the road? When your record company says, now you got to go out and make us some money, and he laughs at you like it's an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. Well, who are you going to bunk up with? I mean, who's going to be your mate when you get into a hotel room, you know? You choose, or, you know, I mean, whatever, you know. Who are you going to get along with in this band? You get a feel for that? What? You know, I'm just saying that living with people on the road is difficult sometimes. And if you can find people that you can get along with, in other words, you're acting stupid and they just look the other way and they laugh, hey, that's something good, you know, rather than fighting with you about everything or saying, I don't want to play that because of, you know, da-da, you know what I mean? It sounds stupid, or, you know what I mean? Or, yeah, let's not do that one. Let's do that, you know. We didn't argue like that. Our whole thing, the Music Machine's whole thing, was staying united, especially on the road. People ask you, how's things going? You'd say, great. We're doing just fine. Well, we heard that you're having a real hard time on the road. Everybody has a hard time on the road. The road is not an easy place to be. And I always thought to myself, you know something? You can even get used to being on the road to where you forget where you came from. You know? I mean, there's a lot of people like that. Where are you based? Oh, I've got a little, see, where is it? Or him and Haw, they kind of forgot where they got a mailbox someplace. And they have everything sent there. And then they get to L.A. and they, you know, they've got a, you know, 2 feet stack of bills or whatever, you know, that they got to take care of. And then they're out of there again because they don't feel, it's like a mariner, you know, on an ocean or something like that. He doesn't feel right when he gets to land. You know, he likes to be, you know, floating around on a boat or something. You know, I mean, I found that, you know, with a lot of people, but. But I will tell you that I was never that kind, and I always liked to get back to L.A. and just sleep, you know, and get myself, eat some fat and get back to the weight I was and get my face, you know, go to a dermatologist and, you know, get myself back together, mm-hmm. you know.
So at some point here in 1967, the band comes to an end.
Well, yeah.
The original group.
Yeah, there was management problems, money problems. There was money stolen from us. There were all kinds of stuff. I mean, you can certainly ask all the other guys too, and they'll won't deny it. I'm not speaking for them, of course. I'm speaking to myself and just what I felt. And there were other things too. I wanted to do some studio work because we weren't making any money. And I knew there was a lot of money in the studios at that particular time, and I could have been one of them guys. Jimmy Gordon and Hal Blaine. Hal Blaine used to run around with 3 trucks. You'd have Studio A over here, Studio B over here, and Studio C over there, and he'd go from one gig right to the next. They'd tear down everything, put it back in the truck, truck A, truck B, whatever. And they'd just drop off the stuff, and he'd show up with a stick pack and walk in, take us in the amphetamines and go to work. I mean, you've got to, but you know, when you're that busy and you're making all that kind of money, you got to have a lot of energy, you know. And everybody wanted him, you know. I wanted to be sort of like that guy. Not the drugs, I'm saying. I'm just saying busy like that, and being wanted as a studio musician because you know I'd never made any money.
Yeah. So Sean puts together another
Yeah, he puts together a second lineup.
Okay.
And it was pretty good, you know. But it didn't have the right chemistry. Chemistry is everything.
Now, you talked about a reunion concert the band played.
Yes.
With all the original members?
No, just Sean and myself and a backup band.
And where was this and when was this?
We played in New York, you know, with the year 9/11. What year was that? 2001, I think it was?
9/11, 2001 was the...
November. And people were running around in Halloween costumes. And it was at this place in Greenwich Village called the Village Underground. And promoters would rent that. It'd be a bar in there. And they'd have all kinds of bands play. We put together a backup band with a group called Rudy Petrucci and the Fuzz Tones. And he'd done a lot of work around New York City and everywhere, played with a lot of people. And very good guy, and they had a real good sound, put together a pretty good backup band for us. Mm-hmm. And Sean, being the lead singer, and me being sort of like the heart of the band, it turned out pretty well. So we went from New York City, had a job there, played about 8 or 9 songs at the Village Underground. And then I flew back home to Minneapolis, and a couple of days later went out to L.A. And we played another a place called the Palace Theater, which is a renovated theater from way back in the past, a show house or something. Nice place, actually. So we did 12 tunes. Now, that was with a different backup band.
Yeah.
So we rehearsed with a different group, that venue.
Over the years, have you discovered a new generation of fans of the band?
Certainly Sean has, without any doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And because he belongs to a Yahoo groups.
A chat room group?
Yeah. He does a lot of selling collectibles and stuff like that, albums, mm-hmm. his bio, book bios, and a lot of stuff. And inspirational, religious tapes and CDs and other things. And these people the Music Machine has a following of these people. A lot of key people that visit the site quite a bit, and some new ones too.
Mm-hmm.
On YouTube, if you go on YouTube and you play some of the tunes on YouTube, the CDs on there, you'll find comments that are made after, what do you think about this, and what do you think about this song, and this and that. And there's a lot of positive comments. And the site has been visited, I don't know how many, over a million times probably. So there's a lot of fanatical people, not fanatical, but I mean just people who are really interested in Music Machine.
You mentioned an event in Los Angeles a while back where you got to meet some of the newer generation of fans. In other words, younger people. Does that surprise you that there's still an interest in this band, this music, this time period?
Are you speaking about the musicians that played at this, like the Palace Theater?
You have a photo of you and some of the guys at this autograph, like an autograph party.
Oh yeah, sure. That was in L.A. Yeah, Mark Lannon was there with me. I stayed at his place for a couple of days, and Keith Olsen. We were there. And we were trying to get Sean there, but the fires of Los Angeles, there was quite a lot of fires there at that particular time, and he couldn't get through. So they just told him to go back home, you know, mm-hmm. and he did. And so that particular, but it's called the Music Fan Festival. And there was supposed to be another one in Las Vegas, but I don't know if the economy had something to do with that mm-hmm. or not, but there was going to be another one.
Mm-hmm.
And people, there was a lot of... older groups there. The Knack, I believe, was there that day. The ones that did Sharona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Knack, yeah.
Yeah, they did a performance of that. Phil Upchurch, he was there, jazz guitarist or blues guitarist mm-hmm. there. Sweetwater.
But do you find there's a new generation of younger people that are interested in this music?
Yes, I do. But they're mostly fans. They're not really musicians.
Right.
In other words, they're not emulating the tunes and stuff and playing the tunes. And otherwise, it'd be all kinds of covers. You know, you hear them on the radio all the time.
You know? Do you get correspondence now from fans?
I do. Years ago, there was a fellow by the name of Buzz Buchanan, and he was a disc jockey here. And he used to play Talk Talk all the time on the radio, right? Well, he had moved to Duluth. And at IMS, where I had been working, his daughter worked there. So she heard that I was in the music machine thing and mentioned it to her father. And father says, "What? I've got a 45. So he sent the 45 along, original 45, no, from Original Sound Records. And I autographed it and gave it back to her, and she took it up to her father. You know, he was overjoyed, you know, to have it. But I do occasionally get album covers in the mail with return postage on them and stuff like that. And I just sign them and stuff, you know, and give it back to them. And I've gotten quite a bit of it, actually, more than I would say most fallen music stars, if you can say that, over the years.
Any talk of the original band members getting back together for a concert?
Well, you know something, I talk about that all the time. And I think, personally, that everyone kind of wants to move on. Although, Keith mentioned it to me, and he said, you know, there's a lot of Indian casinos up there, you know, we can get together with a couple other bands and go run through there, you know. And there's Indian casinos everywhere, you know. Even we could even do something in Vegas or do it anywhere, you know. I mean, there's wherever there's an audience for it, there's room to play. Now, some of the members might not go along with it, you know, because of hard times, and you know, or they were sore because of, you know, certain things that were said and in the, you know, Sean's biography and all this, and you know, there was just some stuff that went on that they probably wouldn't want to do it. But I talk about it all the time. I say, hey, let's get together and play, you know. I'm all for it.
On the YouTube video of the band playing Talk Talk, where was that filmed?
Boss City, I think. I think there was two of them. Cherry Cherry and Talk Talk, I think, were both doing Boss City, which was a local KHJ, or I don't know, it was a local studio.
In Los Angeles?
In Los Angeles, yes.
Okay. Was it a TV show?
Yes.
Or mm-hmm. was it a TV show?
So it was sort of like Casey Kasem also had a show. I can't remember what the name it was. Anyway, we were, that's also on YouTube as well. Mm-hmm. A real short little intro, you know, introduction. And then they play Talk Talk, you know, and it's all lip-synced.
What year did you come back to Minneapolis?
1977. I got married out in Los Angeles, and that was interesting, by a judge who mm-hmm. knew my wife's father. So he married us. You know, I just had my best man and her, and she had her best gal, you know. Threw the flowers at her. I dropped the ring on the floor and picked up. That's supposed to be bad luck.
You told me you kept a low profile when you came back here.
I did, yeah.
And the reason for that was?
Well, for the most part, not in this last job that I had had for the last 16 years, but previous to that, nobody wanted to have a musician. If you mentioned the fact that you were a musician, you didn't get the job, or they would fire you, let you go, because they thought that you would, as soon as you got something better, you'd be, you know, you would be on your way. Mm-hmm. And they were right. But, so I didn't mention it at all. I didn't mention about any of that. Left that history alone.
Do you ever get a knock on your door? Hey, are you the drummer from The Music Machine?
Yeah, this guy by the name of Tom Campbell called me up one night and said, I understand that, you know. And I said, well, what do you, I said, no, I'm the guy. Yeah.
To be honest with you, for years, there's been rumors that there was some connection between mm-hmm. members of the Music Machine and Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And it was through Denny Johnson's friend and musician, John Richardson, who said, yes, the drummer lives in St. Louis Park. And
his How did he know that?
I don't know.
He's one of those people that know a lot of things about a lot of everybody. I wanted him here today, but he's in Door County with his wife. So.
Okay. Yeah, just to end that thought, I used to be very quiet about that, mm-hmm. all that history. If somebody would pin me up on the wall, you know, next to the wall, and say, "You got to mm-hmm. tell me this now," I mean, I saw you and da 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 da. You know, I said, "Well, okay, what do you want to know?" You know. But recently, being at IMS, they were thrilled.
They knew.
They knew, yeah. And I say, if you want to know something about the band, go to YouTube. And they said, what? You're not on YouTube. And I said, yeah, just go and check it out. Said, no, I don't. Where's your computer? I sit down and go to YouTube and just write in the search column, mm-hmm. The Music Machine. And it pops up and it's played. And, well, which guy are you? He said, I'm the guy with the hair who plays the drums there. So, yeah, that's right. You let the nose is the same.
The song seems to have a staying power, as does the band.
Yeah.
It's one of those songs that sticks in your head.
Yeah. I called Eric from KQRS up one day. Ray Eric. And I said, could you play a tune request from the 60s? And he said, oh, yeah, I can do that. And I said, could you play Talk Talk for me, please? And he said, were you a member of the Music Machine?
He had caller ID. Right?
And I think he's a very smart man because he had played Talk Talk quite a bit, you know, when I first got here. I'd heard it quite a bit on the radio. It was still kind of a hot song, you know.
So he might have known you were the drummer.
Well, he may have recognized that or just may have known, just a smart guy, and he knows about old bands and what the members were and this and that, you know. Or one of the possibilities would be nobody ever requests Talk Talk, so it must be the guy in the band, right?
Are you in touch with the original band guys to this day?
Yes. Yeah. I talked to Doug recently, and I'm the one that does that. Mm-hmm. I'm real good friends with Mark Landon. I talk to him all the time. I talk to Sean occasionally. I talk to Doug very rarely because I can hardly reach him all the time. It's almost like Christmas when I can get him on the phone. But when I do, you know, he's always been very nice and you know, mm-hmm. And Keith, of course, is a jewel. He's a great guy and real fun to be around and real personable and stuff. And he really respects me, being a tremendous bass player. We just got along like that, you know.
There's always a connection, I think, between the drummer and the bass player.
That's right. That's right. And without that tightness in the pocket, meaning groove or the rhythm of the song, it just doesn't happen. I played with a lot of bass players that I couldn't get along with, mostly because they would use too much attack on their bass, or they'd rush or drag or be looking at gals and stuff, or you know, distracted, or play too loud, or didn't play with any dynamics, or number of reasons, you know. And
is the house on Elmira Street in San Pedro still there?
I have no idea. Although, I did talk to Joe Brule, which is a really good friend of mine from the West Coast, guitar player, who was tight with the band, and he lived out there. And mm-hmm. I talked to him recently, and he says, no, it's still there.
Hmm.
So, yes, to your answer.
So,
your question, yeah.
The garage at that house just might be the most famous garage in popular music.
Well, if they were to hang a sign on it, on the door, say, this is the place, it probably would.
Ron, thank you for taking the time to tell us about your experiences.
Oh, you're welcome.
In the music business.
I hoped I made a few things more clear than they were before.
The preceding interview was recorded on July 11th, 2010 at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Danny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MinniePaulMusic.com.